which is United States versus Meir and Raffel. Mr. Bernstein, it's time.
May it please the court, I'm Howard Bernstein. I represent, I have the privilege and honor of representing Hassan Raffel in this appeal of his conviction from a bench trial for conspiracy to possess with intent to distribute and to distribute cathinone. I would like to draw the court's attention to, or put the case in a perspective that draws the court's attention to what I submit in my two discussions to the Dogwood argument in the Rule 29 submission. And by the way, Ms. Jacobs will be addressing the other two issues in the case. But I would like to draw the court's attention to what I submit makes this case highly unusual, particularly with respect to the subjective nature of the drug involved and the testing procedures that were involved in the case.
Before you leap into that, may I make a quiet inquiry? So I understand from reading your brief that this particular drug was added to the list in 1993.
That's correct, Judge.
And who has the authority to add?
The Drug Enforcement Agency, in promulgating its directive under a particular protocol.
Congress has delegated to the drugs are going to be prescribed.
That's correct.
And they can do this, and they do it on a regular basis.
Well, they did it in this case.
This is 93, but why did it take so long? How many cases have gone up on this drug since 93?
I have another notebook approximately this size of as many cases as I could find. There aren't really that many. They're out of just a few districts.
How do you pronounce the drug in the drug traffic, by the way?
How is it pronounced?
Yes.
There are different spellings and different pronunciations.
Yeah, no, you got me baffled. I'm very interested. I may start chewing this stuff if you tell me what it is.
The drug is actually cathinone. That's the primary ingredient in cathinone.
Spell the thing K-W-A-T?
It's spelled Q-A-T-K-H-A-T. There are multiple spellings.
How would you pronounce it?
I pronounce it cot.
Cot.
The plant, not the drug. The plant.
Yes. I know the drug is in the plant. Yes.
That's correct. It's a shrub. While we're on that point, Judge, I would like to pull this in a little more perspective. If you look at page 11 of the government's appendix in their brief, in the top right-hand corner, which is one of the forensic articles that was provided, it shows that the dry portion of the plant, which is called guaraba, is used in tea, in making tea, and in preparation of food. According to Dr. LeBeau, who was one of the experts brought in by the government, one of the forensic experts, he estimates that cathinone has the effect of perhaps one-third the effect of amphetamine. Cathine has the effect of perhaps one-tenth of the effect of amphetamine. The U.S. sentencing guideline, which again, I submit, is further evidence of the subjective nature of all this. The only place it's mentioned, as cited in the brief.
I didn't understand. What are you arguing for?
I'm arguing that Daubert, that the science in this case, Your Honor, does not meet the reliability standard in Daubert. It doesn't come close to meeting that. And the argument is made throughout, and let me give you a simple example. In the appendix, or the supplemental appendix that we filed, the very last page is a one-page sheet of 21 test results that Dr. McCoy listed to show the inconsistency of the results of the test. We have laboratories, the DEA lab and the other two laboratories involved, do not have a set series of protocols for this particular drug. That would be the cathinine and the cathinone and the cathine test. Not only do they not have the protocols, but you have Dr. McCoy talking about his extensive experience of creating the methodologies used to test drugs. And there is no set protocols, period, for the testing of that drug. That's why this is not like a typical drug conspiracy case.
So it can't be tested or what?
My submission, no, there's nothing wrong with the machinery, Judge. The gas chromatography mass spectrometry machine is a fine machine. The problem is that there wasn't enough known about this drug when it was first put on the schedule. There hasn't been enough developed about it scientifically since then. And so what we have is what...
My question is, yes. Is it impossible to identify the cathine or the cathinone in cod?
No, it is not impossible to identify it if it's there. The question, though, then becomes, are we going to follow a trace test, or are we going to require more?
That's not an element of the offense, is it? The amount?
The amount is not, but here's the problem as I see it. If we accept the trace, any amount test, I could give another example. I have heard and read that the money that we all carry...
Look, but Judge Flom is correct. The relevant quantity is the substance or material containing the illegal drug.
That's correct.
So
I agree.
And it's not like, cocaine on a dollar bill. The point is you ingest this drug and you don't eat your money with a cocaine on it. You ingest the drug, and if it contains a trace of the cathinone or the cathine, then you're consuming an illegal drug. Maybe a silly rule, but there it is.
Well,
so
Judge,
I don't know what you're arguing.
Well, I think the argument is that it stands, I believe it stands.
Are you saying that you can't identify a trace of this, of these components? Is that it? Science hasn't advanced to that point?
I think where we are scientifically is that we have insufficient...
Can science identify traces of these components?
We have insufficient data, Your Honor.
Just answer yes or no. Can science determine trace amounts of these drugs?
Yes, to some extent, but there were 40 tests where there were none.
What to some extent means?
Well, because there were about 60 tests of, I think 62 tests of drugs in this case, 40 of them came up blank. And on that list in the back, one of the 22 is blank.
Well, if there are traces, of course, they're hard to identify. But do you think the 22 are fake or what? That they weren't traces?
They're not a complete result, Judge. For instance,
you don't need a complete result. All you need is evidence that these drugs contain traces of the forbidden component. Now, my question is, the 22 tests that were positive, are you saying they're invalid tests?
Actually, yes, to a degree we are. We're saying that there were unreliable methods.
You answer my questions, yes or no.
I think it requires a little more of an answer.
No, it doesn't. You can say yes or no, and then you can
accept.
And then you can explain.
Yes,
right?
and then,
so my question is very simple. Those 22 positive tests, are they invalid? And so that we don't know whether there's even the tiniest trace in this stuff or what?
Yes, Judge. I believe the test, to a degree, according to the testimony of Dr. McCoy, would render them invalid.
What renders them invalid?
His testimony is that the methods used were unreliable and that the application of the methods was unreliable.
Course, positive results are an unusual consequence of a test that doesn't work. Is the notion that the test will register traces of something that isn't there? Is that the problem?
Yes, Judge. He could not, to a degree of scientific certainty, testify that any of those results were accurate. That was his testimony in the record.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Bernstein. Ms. Jacobs?
And how do you pronounce it, Ms. Jacobs?
Cot.
How do you pronounce it?
Cot.
Cot. Like C-O-T?
Yes.
Okay. I'll go with that.
All right. May it please the Court, Michelle Jacobs for Mr. Meyer. I'm going to address the two arguments relative to Mr. Meyer's convictions in particular, and really both of them hone in on the conspiracy count. And I'll start with the sufficiency of the evidence. It's oftentimes when this court reviews sufficiency of the evidence on a drug conspiracy, we're typically talking about buyer-seller versus conspiracy. But here, I would submit that the problem is slightly different, and that is the government has charged a conspiracy to distribute cot. But what I would submit was proven, if there's a conspiracy, is not a conspiracy to distribute cot, at least relative to my client. There were other co-conspirators who clearly were couriers and money people and all those kinds of classic drug conspiracy roles. But my client's role was different, and the evidence in particular was very different. The evidence coming from the only person that he was supposedly conspiring with, Mr. Ahmed, was they were not in business together. They didn't share profits. They didn't do any of the classic conspiratorial things that we would look for in a record when you're assessing a conspiracy to distribute. There's a lot of talk about mutual benefit, that my client got some benefit from Mr. Ahmed's activities. And that may be true in the sense that there's people coming through his coffee shop. But mutual benefit is not drug conspiracy. There is not an agreement or a meeting of the minds here. There's not mutual involvement in the distribution of this drug. In fact, the record showed that when Mr. Meyer allegedly began selling cot out of his store, Mr. Ahmed had to stop. That's page 256 in the record, page 296, 297.
So in the beginning, your guy supplied the restaurant for people to chew the stuff.
And that is a violation of 856, and we have not challenged that conviction.
But that can get together, that idea of using the restaurant stopped when your guy started to sell it himself.
I'm sorry.
Your guy started to sell it himself at some stage.
At some point down the road, that's the allegation, yes. Yes. But not with Mr. Ahmed. And
all
that's really... I'm sorry?
All by himself. Solo.
All by himself.
Good. So.
And in fact, Mr. Ahmed testified that's when he had to stop. And so I would submit that it's sort of a different animal of this conspiracy, but what I would submit is that the evidence really has, you know, Mr. Ahmed says, I didn't pay Mr. Meyer. Actually, he said he did pay him, but then on cross-examination said he did not pay him. There was no evidence that Mr. Meyer was recruiting participants to the conspiracy, didn't receive drugs, didn't supply drugs, they didn't know each other's suppliers, none of the evidence of a conspiracy to distribute. So I would submit that the evidence is insufficient as to Mr. Meyer's involvement in a conspiracy to violate 841. Now, with respect to the double jeopardy argument, again, in looking at the briefing, even this morning, there is a lot of talk about the conduct. And I appreciate completely that this is a Blackburger elements, you know, test that is typically applied to a double jeopardy analysis. Backing up even a little bit further, the question is, did the legislature intend multiple punishments for both of these convictions? And I would submit in this case, no. This court and others have said that because two offenses don't have to always be the same in order for there to be a double jeopardy problem in some instances. And I would submit in this instance, there is a problem. And the reason for that is the maintaining a drug house statute required proof that my client was maintaining the place and that it was maintained for either the use or distribution of a controlled substance. And again, conviction we have not challenged. But the conspiracy here, the only evidence is an agreement, my client's agreement, to maintain the place. And in fact, the indictment really doesn't allege anything more than that relative to his involvement at the time of this conspiracy, that he maintained the
place. Conspiracy collapses into the substantive offense that...
Well, I think
never heard of that.
I think it does here. Typically,
what's special about this?
Well, typically when you're talking about collapsing into the substantive offense collapsing into conspiracy or vice versa, you're talking about a conspiracy to distribute and distribution. Here you have this conspiracy to distribute, which, as I've suggested, I don't really think was a conspiracy to distribute. I think it was nothing more than maintaining a drug house. And so the agreement, what my client agreed to and the theory of prosecution was he agreed to maintain a place for the distribution of narcotics, and COT in particular. And so I would suggest that the elements here really are functionally equivalent, and for that reason, there is a double jeopardy problem. If the court has no further questions, I would rely on the brief, save my remaining time for rebuttal.
Ms. Ridgway?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Cynthia Ridgway, Assistant United States Attorney. On behalf of the government, I also represented the government in the case below, before the trial court. There are so many cultural traditions that are rich in America that we adopt from overseas. Cultural traditions that we would submit affect the lives of the people in Southern District of Indiana and certainly before this court's jurisdiction.
Well, Judge Bauer has expressed a great deal of interest in this cultural...
They tell me 99% of the masculine population in the Horn of Africa chew it.
If you want to travel to Ethiopia or Somalia,
Is that statistic correct?
I don't think there is a specific statistic that I know of.
But there's a hell of a lot of them chewing.
I think there are. There are a lot.
Does all the cot contain cathine or cathinone?
No, it does not.
It's added or it's grown specially?
So when the plant matures, the cathinone develops in its new roots, in its shoots. And then when the plant matures, that cathinone is subject to a metabolic conversion that converts naturally to cathine, and then that cathine converts naturally to nothing.
That disappears.
Right.
But that loses all that. There's no kick left. Is that, what is cot? Does anybody smoke cot after the cathine has dissipated?
Not that I know of, Your Honor.
Is it only chewed, or is it otherwise ingested? How else would you ingest it other than chewing?
I think it's only chewed or used in tea, for example, in the Horn of Africa.
Soak it up and make tea out of it,
exactly.
Chew it.
Now, there is a phenomenon now where it's synthesized. There's methcathinone now, where the cathinone is synthesized out and created man-made.
What are the effects
drug.
Of these things? I
mean,
if you chew it, what happens to you?
You get high. You get high just like you would on methamphetamine.
You jump around a lot, or what do you do?
You jump around, and the evidence in this case, it's a good question. The wiretap evidence in this case suggested exactly that, that these defendants, who were primarily taxicab drivers, when they were under the influence of this drug, would stay up late. They would, for example, one of the calls was one defendant talking to another where he was washing his window, and he said, "For 3 hours I've been washing my window. I didn't realize I was washing the windows." Another wiretap transcript indicated that one taxi cab driver was waiting outside a bar. He realized 2 hours later that the bar had been closed.
Now I understand why my proclivity is. I drove a cab for 2.5 years when I was in law school, and now I know why I want to chew this stuff, so go ahead.
So with the phenomena of cot trafficking, and here the abuse and the trafficking of it is not, we would submit, a cultural tradition that we can afford to accept, that we can afford to tolerate in this district. And certainly it is a question that this court has not had the opportunity to address before, but in the due process context, four other circuits, as well as the district court, have considered it, and they have found that with regard to the due process challenge that the defendant appellants forward, that the scienter...
There has to be some notice, doesn't there? I mean, someone could put this cot in his tea without realizing that it was an illegal product, right?
That presupposes...
Nobody reads the, list of forbidden controlled substances.
I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. I would be surprised in this day and time that anyone pulled out their Code of Federal Register and said, "Well, I don't know what I'm going to use for my coffee today, but I think I'm not going to use this because it's in the Code of Federal Register." Similarly, cot, the plant, is identified in the supplement to the Federal Register and also in the rule, the DEA agency rule in 1993 when they did, in fact, make cathinone a proscribed substance. They did describe in great length the history and the connectivity between the plant, cot, and cathinone and caffeine.
There are limits to presuming knowledge of the law, right?
I'm sorry, there...
There are limits to presuming... There have to be some common sense limits to presuming knowledge of the law.
Sure, but...
I thought the government accepted... maybe I'm confused. I think other courts have said that there has to be some evidence that these people had at least an inkling that they were dealing with an illegal substance.
I agree, Your Honor. And I believe that's probably the sine qua non to this entire appeal, the scienter evidence. And the record, as this court is well aware from reading the record, is replete with significant evidence of these defendants' knowledge that this drug was illegal. First, for both defendants, the co-conspirators that testified on behalf of the government testified that this small-knit community all knew cot was illegal. These are not two defendants who
I thought they said they all knew they were chewing it. They didn't know that it was illegal.
All the co-conspirators testified that they knew it was illegal. And the two that are the defendant appellants here are not new immigrants to this country. They both attended high school in Southern District of Indiana. They graduated from high school. They spent years here, all the while acknowledging that there are no marketplaces that sell cot. There are no advertisements that sell cot. There are no storefronts you can go in to sell cot. In fact, exactly the opposite. Hassan Rafli, the roommate...
They had to go out and look for it, huh?
They had. They did. And I think that the government would submit that that is one reason, one of the several reasons, why we have established their scienter in this case. Hassan Rafli was the roommate of Hussein Ahmed, which was the leader of the drug trafficking conspiracy. Hussein Ahmed received these drugs from overseas, overnight international shipments during the time that Hassan Rafli was his roommate. He also had those same shipments absconded, seized by Customs Border Control. At the same time that he was the roommate of Hassan Rafli, he received the drugs, would open them, repackage them for distribution, not at a store, not to market out knowing to other individuals, but secretly in the cloak disguise that Mr. Meyer provided him, the shelter of the coffee house. So that's just one of the elements of scienter. But with regard to Mr. Rafli, he also, we would submit, established as his own knowledge by the fact that Hussein Ahmed paid him $400 to curry these drugs from Indianapolis to Columbus, Ohio. Hassan Rafli is a truck driver. He knows he's not going to make $400 to drive from Indianapolis to Columbus, Ohio if he's driving a legal substance. In addition to that, the wiretap evidence established that Hussein Ahmed and Hassan Rafli engaged in conversations whereby Hassan Rafli was being given instructions on how to avoid law enforcement. Hussein Ahmed told the truck driver, who probably has more driving experience than any of the co-conspirators in this case, drive the speed limit, avoid law enforcement. And on his way back, they discussed where they could meet that would avoid scrutiny, that would avoid lots of people being present.
Admonishing one of your drivers to obey the speed laws is not exactly an element of a conspiracy to commit a crime.
I agree.
Or contrary.
I agree. And that standing alone certainly wouldn't be enough. Yeah. But the compilation of all of this evidence, certainly we would submit establishes that these defendants knew that this drug was illegal. In addition to that, with regard to Hassan Rafli, he also used Hussein Ahmed's alias, an altered version of Hussein Ahmed's alias to send the drug proceeds back overseas. He didn't use Hussein Ahmed. He didn't use Abdi Ali, which was the leader's alias. He used an altered version of that to send the drug proceeds overseas, which we would submit is another factor that shows his scienter. With regard to Mr. Meyer, well, his post-Miranda statement summarizes it all, but that's not alone. That's not the only evidence of his scienter in this case. Certainly, he said, when confronted by the drugs found at his coffee shop, well, my enemies must have placed it there, which we would submit is direct evidence of his knowledge that the cot containing cathinone was illegal. But he also used his own alias when sending the drug proceeds through to Habshal. He didn't use Jama Meyer. He didn't use Jama Ali Meyer. He used his alias, Abdi Aziz. When he was shown an iPhone picture of an individual with what we believe was bags of cot in front of him that was downloaded from his own phone, Jama Meyer said, I don't know who that is. I don't know where it is. The photograph that depicted the individual with the cot in front of him was downloaded from John Meyer's own phone, and he said he didn't know where it was, who it was, where it was, or what it was. And we would submit that that's more evidence that John Meyer also knew the drug was illegal. In addition to that, Your Honors, there's much more evidence of John Meyer's knowledge. But specifically, we would point the court to the facts, the summary of facts that we have, or the recitation of facts, where we include Jafar Tudy's testimony. Jafar Tudy is an individual from Chicago, Illinois, who rented a mailbox in Indianapolis from an individual by the name of Roosevelt Colvin. Mr. Tudy testified at the trial that he was working in cahoots with Jama Meyer, that Jafar Tudy rented this mailbox, and that Jafar Tudy then decided he no longer wanted to use the mailbox. And Jama Meyer, instead of saying, okay, I'll just help you return the keys, said, okay, I need to use that mailbox myself. I'm going to pay you $800 so that I can use that mailbox. And we would submit that's further evidence, circumstantial certainly, but further evidence that Jama Meyer also knew that the cot was illegal. Turning quickly to the Daubert issue, I'll just touch upon it briefly. The inconsistency of those laboratory tests bears not on the issue of whether or not the scientific methodology was reliable. In fact, it shows that the scientific methodology was reliable based on the conversion process that we've talked about that is fact, that is true for this particular plant. There won't be cathinone and caffeine found in every cot substance that's tested because of the metabolic conversion that takes place. And we would submit that the defendant's appellants have failed to establish that Daubert challenge, that the methodology used, the GCMS, which is, of course, the gold standard for identifying controlled substances, was fallible. With regard to the sufficiency of the evidence challenge, the defendant appellants argue that there was no conspiracy to possess with the intent to distribute cathinone or to then distribute it. And the government would certainly disagree with that contention. And we would say this. It's unusual in any drug conspiracy to have an individual willing to put his house up to assist to further the promotion of that drug trafficking organization. That's unusual. However, in this case, he had one. Hussein Ahmed had an individual who was the full circle to that conspiracy. If you think about all the players in the conspiracy as forming a circle, a unified group of individuals working to orchestrate or perpetrate a crime, Jama Meyer was one of those individuals. And there was evidence, specific evidence in the record, that Jama Meyer not only provided his place of business for Hussein Ahmed to traffic the drugs because Jama Meyer wanted Hussein Ahmed to succeed, but also that when Hussein Ahmed was not present at the time that some customer came in to buy the drugs, that Jama Meyer would then sell those drugs on his behalf. That is certainly evidence of their conspiratorial agreement. With regard to the testimony or to the argument that the defendant appellant forwards that Hussein Ahmed testified they were not in business together, they did not share proceeds, that was subsequent. That testimony was in reference to the dry garaba, the dry cot, that Jama Meyer sold after Hussein Ahmed and Jama Meyer's conspiracy had ended. Certainly then afterwards, Hussein Ahmed is not sharing proceeds with or in business with Jama Meyer. But at the time of the conspiracy, Hussein Ahmed's testimony was clear, and it was corroborated by Hashim Ahmed, another co-conspirator in this case. The two agreed that they would benefit each other by allowing each other to sell these drugs. How better to forward a conspiracy? How better to assist a conspiracy than to provide a safe haven for that conspiracy to succeed? With regard to the double jeopardy argument, Your Honors, did the legislature intend multiple punishment? Yes, the answer is yes. Here, they are not functionally equivalent. The government charged the conspiracy in the conjunctive, certainly a conspiracy to possess with the intent to distribute and to distribute. And the maintaining a drug premises is very different from that. There was nothing that required Jama Meyer to allow the individuals, the customers, to then chew the drugs thereafter. He allowed them to buy it at the coffee house. That was their agreement. But there was nothing then that required Jama Meyer to maintain that business to allow those individuals to then consume those drugs that they had just purchased. That is the maintaining piece of the charging document. And in addition to that, there was plenty of evidence to establish that Jama Meyer thereafter maintained that drug premises for the benefit of himself to forward his entrepreneurial ideals in America. Unless the court has any other questions.
Does the Somali House of Coffee exist in Indianapolis anymore?
It does. It does, Your Honor. It's still under, I'm not sure who took it
is
over.
Is this the first prosecution of COT, if that's the pronunciation?
It is.
The district
is
undertaken?
To my knowledge, it is. I mean, the Southern District of Indiana, certainly it's the
I'm
first.
I'm not questioning it. I mean.
Yes. But in the Southern District, it's the first. I'm not sure if the Northern District of Illinois has had an opportunity or another.
I've never seen
it. I haven't seen any case like that.
And I would submit that the phenomena is growing. As we mentioned earlier, the individuals are now synthesizing the drugs. The amount, the volume, unbelievable volume of this cot coming into the country, and all of the proceeds, not all of, but a vast majority of those proceeds are now being funneled back out of the country. And so for that reason, and, you know, just one step down the road, those are the reasons why the government undertook to take this prosecution. And we would respectfully request that you uphold the convictions.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Richmond. So Mr. Bernstein or Ms. Jacobs, do you have anything further?
Thank you, Your Honors. During the government's argument, she indicated that there was certain scienter evidence against Mr. Meyer, and it was things like a photo on his phone, an alleged lie to law enforcement, or this mailbox. But I would submit that that, again, doesn't answer the question of whether there is an agreement between Mr. Meyer and Mr. Ahmed to distribute cot. Those may be, and I think she referenced it in whether or not he knew it was illegal.
But didn't Ahmed testify that after the proprietorship was transferred to Meyer that they would agree to keep selling it at the shop?
Actually, my recollection is that prior to the transfer of the shop to Mr. Meyer, Mr. Ahmed said that he would be able to ship drugs right there. Once Mr. Meyer took over the shop, he couldn't do that anymore. I'll find that for you in just a minute. Once he did take over the shop, the evidence, I think, as is described by the government and is described by the court in the verdict, that there's this existence of an agreement because he lets him use the shop. And then what the court said was, and I think what the government said is, on direct, Mr. Ahmed said Meyer would sell the drug. He would pay Meyer to sell the drugs when he wasn't there. But what the court said in the verdict was, on cross-examination, Ahmed testified he didn't do that. He didn't pay Meyer to sell the drugs. And for that reason, does not credit that testimony.
Didn't Ahmed testify that when he wasn't present, Meyer would sell the cot on his behalf and that Ahmed would pay him to do so?
He did, on direct. But that's why I say, in the verdict, the court references that on cross-examination, he completely backs away from that. And because of that, what the court says is the court doesn't give that or doesn't give it much value because of the cross-examination retraction.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you, Mr. Bernstein. So you were both appointed, were you not?
Yes.
Well, we thank both of you for your efforts on behalf of your firm. We thank Ms. Ridgway for her presentation.